there's something about Scandal that makes people feel alive. It's like Hollywood's favorite perfume, isn't it? A little bit intoxicating, expensive, and always sprayed just as the truth is about to make its entrance. Kind of like how I like to wear my perfume, actually. I'm Bridget, and today we're pulling back the velvet curtain again. After the response to our last true crime episode about Tracy Lords, we realized something. You guys love the messy, the complicated, the human side of fame just as much as I do. So, the downloads, the DMs, the girl, you need to do more like this message, we heard you loud and clear. So today we're back. Another deep dive into the kind of story Hollywood doesn't like to talk about. Because it's those that blend glamour with a little bit of more than just a scandal. Truth with definitely make-believe. And beauty with lots of consequences. And if you love this side of the show, let us know. Comment, share, and tag at Bridget Unfiltered. Or if you're listening on iTunes or anywhere you pod, leave a review. Because honestly, Hollywood definitely has a lot more skeletons than Oscars. And I'm not done digging yet. Welcome to Bridget Unfiltered. Here's the thing no one wants to admit. Fame has always come with a body count. If it's not physical, it's emotional, reputational, or spiritual. Someone's always paying for someone else's power trip. Let's rewind to 1958, when Lana Turner, a Hollywood bombshell with cheekbones so sharp you could cut a glass with, found herself in the middle of a murder scene. Her teenage daughter, Cheryl Crane, had just stabbed Lana's boyfriend, Johnny Stampinato, a known mob enforcer who'd been beating and threatening her mother for years. The press called it the starlet and the stiletto. Lana cried in court. Cheryl was acquitted, and MGM spun the story into one of Hollywood's first redemption arcs. A grieving mother, a misunderstood daughter, and a man who just pushed too far. But the truth? Much uglier than Lana could ever be in our eyes. It was domestic violence, just repackaged. Hollywood's PR machine turned Lana's trauma into their ticket sales. And that's not so different from what we see now, is it? Every time I research these old Hollywood scandals, I realize just how much they still look like our stories now. The only difference is just that back in the day, they were shot in black and white, and now it's being shot in 4K. Back then, women were told how to dress, how to speak, who to love, all to protect a public image that just didn't belong to them. Today, the studio system might be gone, but we built our own version, and I call it social media. Because now, we write the scripts, we edit the highlight reels, and we play the lead in our own movies. But the pressure, the illusion, the performance is still the same. And maybe that's why I'm drawn to these stories. Because Bridget Unfiltered, my own podcast that you're listening to as a whole, was created to pull off the mask. It began to pull off the mask off an industry that I might no longer be a part of, but will for the rest of my life, as part of a negative consequence of it amongst many, will have the judgment and stigma forever. I will carry that on my back for the rest of my life. Every person I meet, every audition, every Zoom meeting with potential advertisers, my name needs a disclaimer. Am I mad? No, I have no business to be mad at it. I made my bed. I made the choices. And it is every day that I work as hard as I do to prove that my past doesn't define who I am. But I am humbled to accept the consequences. So whether it's Hollywood, a heartbreak, or healing, my brand has always been about showing the truth behind the pretty little picture, you know? Because here's the thing. Women like Lana Turner didn't just survive scandal. They literally invented the art of reinvention. And that's something I definitely know a little bit about. The difference is they didn't have a microphone per se, but I do. It is 1957. The MGM logo roaring before every movie. The press calling women starlets instead of professionals. And Lana Turner is Hollywood royalty. She is the ultimate bombshell. Silver screen perfection. With basically her own heartbreak written all over her face. Men didn't just want her. They wanted to own her. Enter Johnny Stampinato, a former Marine turned bodyguard for mobster Mickey Cohen. Think muscles, charm, yet another jawline, and zero emotional intelligence. He met Lana at a party, and within weeks, he was living in her Beverly Hills home. See, this has never happened to me because I am such a homebody, but I digress. At first, he was the protective boyfriend every studio publicist dreamed of, until he wasn't. Friends remember screaming matches echoing through the house. Johnny's jealousy was totally on brand for a mobster. He would show up on her sets, threaten her co-stars, and even phone the studio to check that she was behaving. But here's a twist. Lana wasn't stupid. She'd been in the industry long enough to understand performance, and she knew exactly how to perform just fine. So she smiled through the bruises covered by Max Factor. Fun fact, same makeup artist used on I Love Lucy. She gave interviews about romance, while in private, it was anything but. One night during filming in London, Johnny stormed onto set, waving a gun, furious over a kissing scene with actor Sean Connery. Yes, that Sean Connery. Connery reportedly disarmed him himself, and the studio buried the story. I can totally believe this, and I can totally see this happening because, hello, 007. I mean, so sexy. Again, I digress. By spring 1958, Lana was planning her exit. Her daughter, Cheryl Crane, only 14, mind you, had seen enough to know that this wasn't love. Smart girl, Cheryl. Smart girl. April 4th, 1958. Good Friday. That night, Lana told Johnny it was over. He didn't believe her. He'd heard it before, but this time she meant it. Inside a pale pink bedroom, an argument turned into a scream. And speaking from a Latin woman's point of view here, I can totally see this happening, by the way. Cheryl, in the hallway, she froze. She'd spent years listening to their screaming matches, but this time it just sounded different. So she went and she grabbed a kitchen knife. By the time police arrived, Johnny Stampinato laid on the carpet, blood pooling beneath the man who once bragged he could handle any woman. The newspapers couldn't print fast enough.
Movie idol slain, star's lover killed in bedroom brawl.
The studio went into crisis mode. MGM's public relations team choreographed the next 72 hours as if they were directing one of Lana's next films. Lana, tear on cue, her wardrobe would be soft pastels to embody a saint. A press statement was written not by a mother in shock, but by her agent. Publicly, she was the victim, but privately, she was just a liability. The inquest ruled the stabbing justifiable homicide, basically self-defense on behalf of her mother. Cheryl Crane was released, but her life would just never return to normal. She was sent to juvenile detention, then to boarding schools. The tabloid headlines obviously followed her every move, and meanwhile, Lana went back to work because she had to. Something I'm also very familiar with. Not the my daughter stabbing my man part, but that the show must go on mentality. Within a year, MGM cast her in Imitation of Life, where she played, ironically, a mother torn between fame and family. It became her biggest hit, earning her an Oscar nomination. It looks like her pain was just turned into box office gold and money for MGM. And this is the part that gets me. Hollywood essentially sold Lana's trauma, you know? They packaged it up really pretty and they turned her survival as our entertainment. And every woman watching learned the same unspoken rule. Quote, never bleed where the cameras can see unless the studio can use it. End quote. Taken from Variety. That's the DNA of celebrity culture, from my point of view, from my perspective. They romanticize the resilience while ignoring the violence that caused it. You can't have 1 + 1 for it to equal 2 without the other one. Or maybe you can't have the 1 + 2 = 3 without knowing where the 2 is. You know what I mean. So let's talk about the psychology for a second. Why were people so obsessed with this story? Well, it totally hit the holy trinity. Beauty, betrayal, and blood. Audiences projected their own morality onto it. Men debated whether Lana was worth it. And women debated whether she was asking for it. Oof. And yet no one debated why a 14-year-old girl felt she had to commit an act of violence to protect her mother. That, to me, ladies and gentlemen, that's the true crime inside the crime. Cheryl Crane later said, I wasn't a hero. I was a scared kid. And yet the world treated her like she'd played a role in a movie that she never auditioned for. Here's what I see. Okay, when I look back at the Lana Turner story, sure, we have the glamour, the violence in the headlines, but I don't just see a Hollywood scandal. I kind of see a pattern. A woman performs to perfection until such perfection nearly kills her. A man confuses possession with protection, right? And the audience, us, we can't look away. It's wild how much it just hasn't changed, doesn't it? The cameras might have changed, but because, you know, we went from basically studio cinematography to basically iPhone screens. But the storylines, they're just recycled. The price of visibility back then and now kind of still feels the same. The world will love you, but it will never let you be fully human. And honestly, I think that's why I wanted to tell this story. Because beneath the scandal, there's something familiar. Lana Turner wasn't just a starlet. She was a woman trying to survive her own image. And when her life fell apart, the world didn't offer her a shoulder to cry on or even freaking therapy. No, it just offered her a camera. Offered her a crew. And when I think about my own rebranding, how I've lived, worked, and reinvented myself under a public lens, I totally get it. Not the fame, of course, but the pressure. The idea that once people decide what you are, it might never happen, or it will take years to remind them that you're something else entirely. And honestly, that's the core of Bridget Unfiltered. It's not about being perfect. It's about being real in a world addicted to performance. All right, it's that time again. My favorite part of the show, the part where I put down the notes and the research and take off my pretend host voice. Just kidding. And just talk to you. Welcome to Dear Bridget, where we get even a little bit more real and sometimes a little too honest. And this one is a good one because this one, I was in a shop, like a little coffee shop, and I was having a morning coffee, like this lavender, really good oat-based espresso concoction. So good. And I enjoy talking to strangers as part of my, I don't know what it is, but I'll talk to a wall if I have to. But there was this really cute girl and she was sitting with me and we were talking and she was asking me what I do. And I told her I'm a podcast host and she's like, oh my God, really? So I told her and she was like, well, I haven't heard before. And I'm like, that's okay. I appreciate your honesty. She was telling me that she will, though, and she started asking me a question because I told her that I was heavily influenced by Delilah, and I told her about my Dear Bridget segment, and she put in a question. She's like, I'm going to ask you something then, because after our conversation, I think you might be able to answer this, and she says she would wait until the episode to hear the answer. So, Mia, if you were at the coffee shop in New York City on about 50th Street and 5th Avenue, this one's for you. Dear Bridget, I've always wanted to build a name for myself. Not fame, but a name. I love creating, sharing, and posting online, but lately I feel like I'm living for social media instead for myself. I keep wondering if I'm any different from the women that you do talk about, the ones who get trapped in their image. So how do you stay authentic when being seen sometimes feels like you're losing yourself? That was from Mia. Of course, I worded it more in a question form for the segment, but to me, it was such a real question. How could I not answer it? So first off, Mia, thank you so much for asking it. And I think a lot of people, especially women, can kind of feel that tension, even if they'll never admit it publicly. So let's dive into it. In my opinion, you don't need to be a celebrity to live like one anymore. You basically just need Wi-Fi and a little validation. That's what I mean when I say the studio system never died from the beginning of the episode. Because it literally has just moved into our phones. Now, instead of a producer deciding our image, it's basically the algorithm. It tells us what performs, what pleases everyone, and what gets punished. Hello, TikTok. I mean, if you stop posting 2 days on TikTok, forget it. You go into 100 views. And before we know it, we're basically performing instead of feeling it. And we're chasing the reach instead of the meaning. And we're living out a movie that, much like Lana's daughter, we didn't even audition for. And the thing about Lana Turner and the reason why I wanted to tell her story is that she was loved most when she was suffering, but in a pretty way. Hollywood rewarded her pain because it made for a better narrative. And I think a lot of women today, whether we're influencers or creatives or just trying to be seen for who we are still feeling that our value increases when we're performing instead of just being who we are and in peace. It's why thriving has become a brand. You know what I mean? We're expected to survive all this chaos in a very pretty way. But you can't monetize a healing and still call it authentic. You know what I'm saying? And you don't owe the internet a front row seat to your growth. That's for damn sure. So here's what I tell myself when I start spiraling into that same headspace. The public you is a brand. The private you is human. The goal is to let them coexist, but not compete. So it's okay to create something. We should. The world needs creative people and create beautiful things. But you have to have a version of your life that isn't for sale. Because if you give the audience everything, and I know this for a fact, there's nothing left to come home to. And that is when people start losing themselves. That's when every moment becomes content and every thought has to become this performance. And sometimes the most rebellious thing we can do in 2025 is just to be boring. No post, no story, just us being still at home watching a cozy movie. And that's the part of your life that becomes sacred. And I know this, I'm living it. The stuff that doesn't need an applause needs to matter also. Now, I've lived this. I've been the product of this. I've been the story people thought they knew. And I can tell you, reclaiming your true self doesn't happen in front of the crowd. It literally happens in silence. When you stop reacting, stop proving who you are, and stop editing who you are so that people could consume you more. Now, let me warn you, it's lonely. At first, it's lonely because all that chaos is super addictive. And not just for men, but for women too. We confuse the rush of the attention with connection. But attention fades. Connection is what really grounds you. And if you're asking these questions, if you're scared of becoming an image, you're already doing the work that keeps you just as you should be, which is human and not just something for public consumption. So Mia, here's what I think I would do if I were you. Pick one day a week to go completely offline. No posting, no scrolling, no checking engagement. Yes, you're going to feel withdrawal, kind of like a meth head. Can I say that? Well, you know, a drug, never mind. And that's okay. That's just your nervous system detoxing, okay? And create something that nobody sees. A journal, a song, something that exists only for you. And ask yourself, am I sharing this to connect or to be validated? Ding, ding, ding. The difference between those intentions changes everything. And if you ever feel like you're losing yourself, Mia, in the image, remember Lana. She played every role they handed her. But when she finally told her own story, it was completely imperfect and totally real. And that's the one people still remember. Yeah, they remember her beautiful self, but they also remember her real self. And the point isn't to disappear. It's to redefine what your visibility means to you. You don't have to be this perfect woman online. You just have to be an honest one. And that's the version of you the world actually needs nowadays. Not this filtered fantasy, but the one who's learning, laughing, stumbling, forgiving, rebuilding, rebranding, reinventing. That's the version that I hope inspires most people, and not the one that's performing for the camera, but the one who's earning that validation. You know what I mean? So Mia, thank you for that question. It was lovely to meet you that afternoon, by the way. And if you have your own Dear Bridget story, go ahead and message on Instagram at Bridget Unfiltered. I'd love to read it on a future episode. And if we bump into each other, we can do the same thing. Now, let's wrap this up with one final thought. Because if old Hollywood loved their scandal, we might just be the first generation that learns to love our truth more. You know, every time I finish a story like this, something dark, glamorous, I think about how much of life is just spent pretending. And it gets you thinking. We've been doing it since the very first camera basically flashed. Hollywood did it with Lana Turner. Now we do it with filters, captions, our Spotify playlist, you know, different tools. Same pressure, though. And the truth is that most of us are just trying to survive our own storyline. And what makes stories like Lana's timeless isn't the scandal, but the reflection. She was a woman caught between her image and identity, the same tug that so many of us feel today. When the lights went out, she wasn't the character. She was a mother, a survivor, a woman who had to clean up a mess she didn't make. And when her career forced her to smile through all the pain, she still showed up. And that is so not weakness. Because I know when I had to show up on set, even if I was on my period or if I had a massive, you know, conversation, a near breakup with a boyfriend, I still had to show up and pretend everything was fine because a movie had to be told, a movie had to be made. And having to smile through things that nearly broke my heart showed me exactly what survival is. And if you've ever had to keep showing up, even though people were talking about you and talking shit behind your back instead of helping you, hey, you're part of that same storyline. None of us are better than the other because we all had to make peace look pretty because the world was demanding it. You still have to go to work. Doesn't matter if so-and-so is bugging the shit out of you. You still got to go to work. So here's the thing, though. We get to do it differently now. We don't need studios or these algorithms to validate who we are. We can tell our own stories. We can choose what we want to portray to others. We can choose authenticity over the applause if you're a content creator. And maybe that's the real evolution, not that the world finally lets women be quote unquote imperfect, but that we stopped asking for permission to be real. I think about that every time someone messages me after an episode. You know, after they hear the episode, not the episode is done live, but after, you know, one of you guys hear it, you tell me that you relate to such chaos. I totally relate to that one story, Bridget, or that one dear Bridget, totally relate, you know? And I realized that this isn't just a podcast. It's a conversation between us trying to stay human in a culture that's rewarding performance. That's the soul of Bridget Unfiltered. It's not the scandal. It's not the shock value, but the substance. It's proof that we can laugh at our pain. We can learn from our patterns and still love the person we're becoming. So as we wrap this one up, I want to leave you with this little thought. Fame does not make people, whoa, extraordinary. Honesty does. The people, I think, that are able to last through all of this chaos are the ones, especially in Hollywood and in our everyday relationships and in life in general, are the ones who are done pretending. The ones that are just being honest and real, because we can all do that. Whether your stage is a set or an office or a ranch or a living room with your buds and you're all just talking to each other, your story matters. And the minute you decide to tell it truthfully, you take your power back. Thank you so much for spending your time with me, for letting me tell these stories that live somewhere between history and healing. If you love this episode and you want to hear more of my perspectives on these Hollywood true crimes, go ahead. You know what to do. Go on Bridget Unfiltered Instagram, leave the reviews wherever you pod. Your feedback is exactly what's shaping what we are building here, because this isn't just my story, it's ours. So until next time, stay curious, stay calm. you know what I mean? And as always, stay unfiltered. Love ya. Bye.